from KQED.
From the Sacramento studio of KQED Public Radio, I'm Dave Iverson. Changing statistical methodologies is not usually headline-making material. But this time, a change in how the Census Bureau calculates poverty rates resulted in some stunning numbers. Nearly a quarter of our state's population, some 9 million of our fellow Californians, live below the poverty line, the highest rate in the nation. In the hour ahead, we'll talk about what those numbers mean, and then we'll hear from local food bank representatives about whether they're prepared to help the needy during the upcoming holiday season. Poverty in California and feeding the hungry. Next on Forum, after this. From the Sacramento studio of KQED Public Radio, I'm Dave Iverson. 9 million Californians, nearly a quarter of the state's population, live below the poverty line. That's according to a new Census Bureau calculation that for the first time includes factors like California's high cost of living. The new methodology boosts California's poverty rate from 16% to over 23%, the highest rate in the nation. In this hour of Forum, we're going to first explore what's behind those numbers, what they mean for our state, and then we'll turn our attention to food banks and the state of hunger in the state of California and whether or not we can meet the needs of the poor and the hungry during this holiday season. Joining us first, Sarah Bone. She's policy fellow and an economist with the Public Policy Institute of California. Sarah, good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
And joining us by phone is Ann Huff Stevens. She's professor of economics and director of the Center for Poverty Research at the University of California, Davis. Ann Huff Stevens, good morning as well.
Good morning.
So, Sarah Bone, tell us first about this seemingly dramatic change from a place where we had 16% of the state poor, still a very high percentage, to now almost a quarter. What changed that made those numbers bump up so dramatically?
This new measure from the Census Bureau that reflects about 9 million in poverty in California is the effort of many researchers over quite a long period, actually, trying to develop a more comprehensive picture of what poverty looks like in the nation and in the state. And researchers really believe this is a really richer way of showing poverty. And that's mainly because the official poverty measure that we tend to rely upon is useful and is simple, but is based on 1960 kind of definition of what it means to be in poverty. And as we know, things have changed dramatically in this country, in this state, since 1960. So this new methodology by the Census Bureau and others takes into account a lot of things that have shifted since then to really try to provide a better picture.
And is that primarily cost of living, cost of housing, that California is just a much more expensive place to live than most any other state in the country?
We think that's probably what's driving these numbers. But actually, in this new measure, a lot of things are going on at the same time. And that needs to be unpacked a little bit further so that we can understand better exactly what's going on in California. The new methodology takes a standard kind of way of measuring poverty, which is to look at families' income and compare that to some kind of yardstick of well-being and to sort out, you know, who's in poverty. And both of those things shift in this new measure, incorporating cost of living adjustments and standard of living that has changed over time, as well as the impact of government programs that are intended to alleviate poverty, that give families food stamps, for example, or tax credits, all of those things that can really impact material poverty.
So what do you take from this, Ann Huff Stevens, in terms of this new measurement? Obviously, it's not that suddenly people suddenly became more poor. It's really then a measurement, if I understand it, of the fact that it's not just how much money you have, it's how much you're paying for housing, or it's whether or not you qualify for food stamps. It's this more complete picture of what it means to be poor in this state?
That's right. I think it's tough to look at these numbers for California and see this as, in some sense, a good thing. But the good news here is that this poverty measurement really is a huge step forward in better capturing the actual resources that families have and the actual needs they face to survive day to day. And as Sarah and you've mentioned, it's simply a fact of life that in California, housing costs are very high. There's a number of other adjustments that kind of hit California especially hard that drive up our poverty rate more than any of the other states.
So when you look at this, Anna Stevens, what jumps out at you as far as the implications for future public policy decisions?
Well, I think the main driver, and as Sarah said, we need to really study this a bit more to understand the details, but it does put a real light on the high cost of living and high housing costs. Some other things, though, that are important are one thing this measure does is it focuses on government benefits that may be non-cash, things like food stamps, that weren't being counted before. And one fact about California is that it has a very low rate of participation in the SNAP or food stamp program. So that means when we start counting those benefits, California doesn't sort of get as big a boost as other states. And so focusing on the cost and what's going to the poor is really what we need to think about as we look at these.
And why is that? I mean, why would California, Sarah Bone, be not as have a higher food stamp participation rate? What's going on with that?
This is a major policy question to look at who's eligible but not taking up food stamps, as well as other government programs intended to alleviate family poverty. But it's good news in the sense that, you know, there may be something more that we can do. And if you look at the Census Bureau's national measures, if you don't count food stamps and family income, actually child poverty rate is much higher than it is when you include it. So there's evidence that this really moves poverty substantially.
Say that again. I want to make sure I understand this because – so if you – just say it again so I understand it.
If you don't count the food stamps benefits that are received by many families, especially families with children in the United States, the poverty rate in this new measure would look even worse. So we don't know yet exactly what that would look like in California because we don't have enough detailed data on that yet. But it is evidence that this program is one thing that can move poverty substantially, especially for children.
So it makes it's evidence that can make a difference and would point towards the need for California to be more aggressive about enrolling people in that program?
Well, it's something for policymakers in the state to weigh, you know, the costs and benefits of these various kind of programs. But having this kind of information and to the extent we can develop it further for California will really give us what we need to know in terms of weighing the costs and benefits.
I want to ask you both something about the demographics of our state and how that plays in. It's striking that the rates of poverty are much higher among Latinos and African Americans than they are for Asian Americans and for whites, and that there are also there's a correlation between level of education. Does that mean, Ann Huff Stevens, that California, because it has a younger population, because there's a higher immigrant population, that's part of what's making California so have such a high rate of poverty?
I actually don't think that aspect of our demographics is what's caused this big jump, because it's true poverty rates are higher among Latinos and African Americans, but that was true under the old measure as well. And so I think, you know, that on the other side of this, because we are a young state, a lot of the benefits that are being added to this new definition go disproportionately to younger people, children, and young adults. And so that I don't think that quite explains this particular change.
So where does this put forward the public policy choices that you both think the state maybe ought to consider? In our first hour this morning, we talked about the improving state budget situation, that suddenly, for the first time in many years, California state budget looks better. Does that then raise for both of you certain questions that you think the governor and the legislature ought to focus on now that we know how poor we are?
I think it does. All Californians have made sacrifices over the last several years, and I think the lowest in the economic ladder have faced a lot of cuts to social services, cuts to education and training programs. And so this new measure just makes even clearer how difficult it is to survive on limited income in a very high-cost state. And so I think that should be kept in mind as we do go into the next round of tough budget decisions.
So if you were to walk across the street, Sarah Bone, at the end of this program over to the Capitol, to the rotunda, I mean, what would you want to have lawmakers, the governor, others really begin to think about?
I would highlight the fact that this poverty rate, this new measure, is extremely high for California. But California's poverty rate in general has always been, almost always been higher than the U.S. rate. And so it, in addition to, you know, those kind of things that families have experienced over the last few years due to the recession, there's a long-term story here, too. And that is reflecting kind of the changing economic opportunities in our state, which have disproportionately, you know, gone towards people with more education. And low-income workers have faced, or low-education workers have faced hollowed-out opportunities, really. And that's kind of what I see as the core issue that needs to be addressed. And one way that the policymakers can do that and the public can support is through expanding educational opportunities really across the life course.
We, in our last half hour, Matthew Cate, the outgoing Secretary of the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, talked a lot about we need to pay attention to evidence, not just feelings when it comes to crime. And his focus was on the kinds of things we've learned about who's likely to be a repeat offender and who it makes sense to parole, so forth and so on. I guess that makes me want to ask the same question here, Ann Huff-Stevens, about do we know what works in terms of being able to bring people out of poverty? We mentioned food stamps, but is there evidence about the kinds of efforts that we would be well served to focus on?
I think there is a growing body of evidence, and much of it focuses on the type of non-cash benefits that we give to low-income families that weren't included in the old poverty measure. For example, researchers at UC Davis have evidence of immediate and longer-term health benefits of programs like food stamps, Women's Infants and Children Nutrition Program, where kids are healthier because they get the support and have better long-run outcomes. Similarly, with a federal program, the Earned Income Tax Credit, seems to improve children's outcomes. And so that type of evidence is accumulating, and this new poverty measure gives us a measure that takes account of these programs, and we should think about those as we develop policies.
Ann Huff-Stevens is professor of economics and director for the Center of Poverty Research at UC Davis. She joins us along with Sarah Bone, also an economist and policy fellow for the Public Policy Institute of California. Do you have questions about these new poverty statistics, ideas about where you think the state ought to now focus some of its attention if this is going to change? You can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. We're going to also turn our attention shortly to what this means in real everyday terms for people who are hungry and poor in California and the role that food banks and food pantries are playing in terms of helping those in need, especially during this holiday season. Again, the number if you want to join our conversation, 866-733-6786. What do we know about the working poor? I mean, one of the things that was striking to me as I looked at this story, Sarah Bone, is that it sort of defies in some ways sort of conventional assumptions, but work and poverty sometimes go hand in hand.
In California, that's indeed the case. We've seen over the last three decades, actually, the percentage of poor families who have full-time working adults within them has quadrupled, really, from 10% back in the 70s to over 38% in recent years. And if you include people who are working part-time as well, well over a majority of Californians that are in poverty are in working families.
And so what does that tell us about where, again, resources ought to be directed? Does it mean we need to sort of work on the kinds of jobs people have through job training? Is it by giving people more educational opportunities? What's the next line that follows from that observation?
I think there are a couple routes here. First is the new measure actually tries to take account of the changes in kind of the cost of working. So the cost of childcare, which has changed a lot over the decades, the cost of transportation to work, all of these things that are required to maintain a job, we're trying to include that in these new poverty measures. But at the core is really increasing the economic opportunities of families in California.
Ann Huff-Stevens, what are your thoughts on sort of changing that ratio so that work doesn't equate to poverty?
Right. I think that's really at the crux of the problem here. And since the 1980s, real wages in the U.S. and in California at the bottom of the distribution have declined. And so it's not as easy for a low-skilled worker working even pretty close to full-time to earn enough to get above the poverty line. Then when you add the fact that in California commuting costs may be high, in some areas you have to travel a long way to work, you have these work-related expenses that then further reduce the return you get to going to work. And so, you know, it's doing something to improve these outcomes. What is that something? Training programs, though it's difficult to know exactly what areas to train workers for, but we're constantly working on that. And, you know, some areas have tried subsidized employment, where you give workers some employers some subsidy to hire certain workers, and often that can develop into longer-term employment relationships. It's something that's hard to do in a tight budget, but has been done.
Let's hear what some of our listeners are thinking about this topic this morning. David joins us first from San Jose. David, go ahead.
Thanks very much. It's a really fascinating topic. I recently read that poverty level calculations may not include the value of all benefits that a person may receive, whether they're welfare or food stamps, not cash, non-cash. Do these calculations include everything every person is getting from any governmental agency?
David, thanks. Sarah Bone or Ann Huff Stevens, do you know the answer to that?
Well, I would say I can't say these new measures include everything, but they go much, much further than our old traditional official poverty measures. And that's one of the big improvements, is that we're trying to account for things that aren't cash transfers, housing subsidies or food stamps or things like that, that should be counted in a sense.
So it works on both sides. I mean, it's taking into account the high cost of living, but it's also giving you points on the other side if there are those kinds of benefits, Sarah Bone?
It may be giving you points, but it's also the new measures take account of taxes. And for some families, that's results in them having less income to spend. And other families who may receive a tax credit, like the earned income tax credit or others, it may go in the be on the plus side.
Roger joins us next with another question. Roger, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. You know, my father and I were small business owners here in the San Francisco Bay Area. We have three locations. We run gas stations, actually. And when you and your speakers were speaking about the working poor, something popped into my mind, and that is, you know, we try to keep we hire about 25 people total, and we pay more than we have to, legally speaking, in terms of minimum wages to our guys. And we retain our people and we try to give them as many benefits as we can. But sometimes, you know, the cost of doing business in California, especially in such a highly regulated field as running a retail gas business, I mean, sometimes it's hard for us to make a living. You know, we've spent a lot of money on these investments, obviously, and so on and so forth. And we're, you know, we would be considered, you know, middle class probably. But even if we'd like to pay our guys more, and sometimes we do, we try to give them big bonuses at the end of the year and so on and so forth to keep everybody happy, keep morale high. We believe in that strongly, but simply we can't, because the cost of doing business sometimes in California is it's unbelievable sometimes, you know, for us to even try to make a living here. So I just wanted
Roger,
to throw that out there as well.
Right. No, Roger, interesting point. Ann Huff Stevens, any thoughts on that in terms of working at the other end of the equation? We've been talking about what can be done for the working poor, but are there things that could be done for employers, I guess, that would encourage people like Roger or support people like Roger who sort of want to do the right thing?
Well, I think this is reflecting again in a slightly different way the high cost of living and, as he says, doing business in California. I think he touches on something important, is that he says he pays workers more than he legally has to, and he's doing this to try to keep a workforce so you don't have a lot of turnover. I think, you know, encouraging firms to understand that there may be benefits to paying workers a little more and being able to retain them longer so you have lower turnover cost is an important point to make. As far as the regulatory environment, I think that's it's probably outside of my area of expertise, but we certainly hear a lot about it, and it's an interesting connection to this very different problem that talking about poverty in the state.
Roger, thanks for the call. Number of interesting emails coming in. Claire writes, can you ask your guests about where poverty is found in California? Is it concentrated in a few extremely poor areas, or is it more widespread? Is there a north-south urban-rural split, Sarah Bone?
We have a huge state and a wide variation in the experience of poverty across areas in California. We don't really know from this new measure yet, but from the official poverty measure for California, we see huge variation. A lot of coastal areas, San Mateo County has among the lowest, and inland areas in particular in the Central Valley have poverty rates as high as 27% in Fresno County. Those are some of the highest poverty rates in the nation, actually. So it's really important for us to unpack these measures a bit more to really understand how our population is varying across the state.
Someone else writes in about the question about who's eligible for food stamps, whether or not undocumented workers are, and if that's the case, or if they're not eligible, would that account for the lower participation in the food stamp program? Either of you know the answer to that, Ann Huff Stevens or Sarah?
I think the answer is that it's even among eligibles. The statistic says among those eligible for food stamps, the participation rates are low. I think it's not accounted for by illegal immigration per se, I think is the understanding here. What might be related, though, is that I think there has been a lot of stigma, so that even eligibles, individuals who are eligible but perhaps might be a citizen or a permanent resident or perhaps just because of their ethnicity might be suspected of not being eligible, may shy away from applying for the program. And I think that's a concern in California.
Alexandra writes, why don't we invest more in vocational education, especially for the urban poor? The educational system often doesn't teach young people things that they see as applicable. Do you see that, as Sarah Bonas, as something that we ought to be thinking more about in light of these statistics in terms of altering the focus of education in poor areas in particular?
I agree completely. I think we need to pay a lot of attention to educational opportunities across the spectrum, really. Vocational education may be a key part of that, as well as increasing attainment of four-year college degrees. I think that we need to look more at the whole spectrum of higher education.
Go ahead.
Could I just add that the one unique aspect of California is this incredible and extensive community college system the state has, which offers a lot of vocational education programs. However, at the same time, over the past several years of budget crises, those community colleges have had cut after cut. And so it's an unfortunate set of timing where we're cutting those very programs just as poverty rates are very high and we may need them.
Let's take one last caller in this half hour from Mark in Berkeley. A quick question, Mark, please.
Yeah, hi. Could you tell me what the definition of living in poverty is, what that looks like, and how it would compare to international poverty rate?
Okay. Thank you, Mark. Sarah?
That's a great question. There are a lot of ways to measure poverty, and these measures really take things relatively rather than an absolute level and thinking about how we in the U.S. compare to global measures of poverty. But what it means in the U.S. By these new measures, for a family of four, about $25,000 a year is about the threshold, and that's kind of adjusted further based on the housing prices in your particular area. But that's kind of the new threshold that we're looking at here.
We have to take a break in just a moment, but a last thought, please, from each of you about the kind of wake-up call, I guess, that this serves. Sarah Bone, what do you think we should now be focusing on that perhaps we didn't until we saw this headline?
I think this highlights the need of California policymakers and the public to really invest in long-term economic opportunities for all Californians. That's in the interest of the state as well as individual families when making ends meet.
And we'll have to hold it there. Sorry, Ann Huff Stevens, not to give you one last word, but we do have to take a break. When we come back, though, we're going to talk about what this means in everyday terms for people who are hungry and poor and the work that the food banks and emergency services are doing around the state to help people, especially during this holiday season. We'll take that up in just a moment. This is Forum. I'm Dave Iverson.